Welcome to Happily Family. I'm Cecilia
And
Hilke,
I'm Jason Hilke.
and we are delighted today to have Dolores Gage with us. Dolores is a Davis facilitator, presenter, and supervisor in training based in Madrid, Spain. She works with clients both in person and online and specializes in supporting neurodivergent individuals with ADHD, dyslexia, dyscalculia, executive function challenges, and autism. Dolores' journey into neurodiversity began while seeking help for her son's learning challenges. She is passionate about how Davis provides answers where traditional approaches fall short. Welcome, Dolores. It's great to have you.
Thanks for being here, Dolores.
Thanks. Thank you very much. I'm very excited to be here, and thank you for the opportunity to get this new understanding of neurodiversity out to a much wider audience.
Yeah, I
Thank you
look
very
forward to
much.
talking to you more about this.
And that's actually where I wanted to start was over the past few decades, the viewpoints, the understanding of neurodiversity has changed. And maybe it's not changed as much as we still want it to change even more, but we're at least trending positively. And I wanted you to describe some of those changes that we've seen in our understanding of learning differences.
Okay, well, I think the biggest change is that finally people are starting to recognize the talents that go with neurodivergent thinking. I think that's the biggest one. And then there are a lot of scientific, there's research, and there are a lot of neurodivergent people who've written books as well, supporting the strengths of neurodivergent thinking in terms of creativity, out-of-the-box thinking, problem-solving, perseverance, pattern recognition. There's a whole load of stuff there. So that recognition is a wonderful step forward. When Ron Davis wrote The Gift of Dyslexia, which actually is the book that got me into being a facilitator, I read it and it was just so many aha moments because suddenly all of this stuff made sense. When he wrote it back in 1994, he was dismissed as a quack because nobody in those days recognized anything positive about dyslexia. And I would say that although there are movements, especially in the English-speaking world, in other worlds, even just 5 years ago here in Spain, I had some very depressing encounters with some people specialized in dyslexia and ADHD, who just could not see anything positive in it. It was only all they saw were the struggles. And the struggles are definitely there, but there is so much more to these kids, so much more. And it is not a problem to do with it. It's nothing to do with intelligence or lack of it. But the problem is, especially with things like basic things like reading and writing, if you can't read, you're dismissed as being stupid in some way. And that's the message that is internalized. So I think the biggest change, coming back to your question, the biggest change, the biggest shift is really just in the start of the recognition that there are strengths associated with neurodivergence as well as the challenges.
Which I think is fantastic to hear because we see it usually as a negative thing, and to see it as something that's positive puts a whole new spin on it. Not spin, but like a different perspective on it. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about like what are some, could you give some examples, like what are some of the strengths, just so that people could understand what it is you're referring to here.
Well, it's like what I was saying, there's creativity, out of the box thinking. They will not take an answer if they can see a better way of doing it. And the chances are they will come up with a better way of doing it. So you've got neurodivergent individuals like Thomas Edison inventing electricity. You've got Alexander Graham Bell inventing the telephone. You've got Steve Jobs inventing the smartphone. You've got the Wright brothers with flight. You've got Picasso breaking barriers and being utterly original. These are all the brilliant ones. One of the dangers, I would say, I think there are that if you look around, you Google neurodivergent strengths or talents, you will get all of these things and more. But one of the dangers that highlighting just the strengths without actually reconciling them with the challenges are so real that and they really undermine any kind of sense of self-esteem and self-confidence. And without self-esteem, we don't even actually go out. We don't open the door. We shut down. If I don't feel I can do it, And I get a lot. In fact, today I was working with a lovely girl with ADHD, age 13, and she has this perfectionist streak. And if she can't do it brilliantly, she won't do it at all. So there's this sort of self-sabotage that comes in as well. And I think this is why one of the reasons why sometimes highlighting these wonderful role models is encouraging. But at the same time, it can actually add to the pressure that a child feels because there's no explanation. Well, they did very well, but what about me? I'm still struggling in class and nobody's helping me. And, you know, or maybe they're trying to help, but these methods aren't working.
Yeah.
So that's the balance that we really need to bear in mind. In terms of the strengths, those are the main ones that tend to come up again and again. Yeah.
Yeah,
That makes
and
sense.
one of the reasons why I'm excited about this conversation is because my background is as an occupational therapist. Jason also has worked with children with disabilities, and then we have also had experience being classroom teachers, and we too had this experience from our training and from our experience of working with children and trying to figure out what are the strengths and coming from that approach while also having the very real challenges that we need to like help kids build some skills or compensate for. So holding both of those, that there's these big strengths and some challenges
Exactly.
at the same time.
And what Davis does, or what I found Davis did for me, put it that way, what Davis did for me was it joined the dots, okay? And it explained, it helped me to understand. And I've now seen it also in my years of as a Davis facilitator working with people with neurodivergent individuals of all ages, adults, children, that there are three basic ingredients, three core ingredients that tend to be present. The first is a preference for nonverbal thinking. Okay, we're all born nonverbal thinkers because when we're born, we don't have language, right? So the only way I have of recognizing my mother is by the shape of her face. And the color of her hair and the color of her eyes and her smell and the sound of her voice and so on. You know, I perceive her through my senses. Okay. So we're all born with this capacity. Now, 80% of any given population transitions relatively smoothly through to a combination of picture thinking and word thinking. And these are two ways of thinking that are recognized scientifically and so on. Now, if I'm thinking words, I'm thinking sequentially at the speed of a sentence, right? But there's 20% of the population who are especially good at thinking through their senses, and it becomes their go-to method of making sense of the world. And so, you know, they'll be touching, feeling things, turning them around, smelling them, tasting them, maybe even. That's what kids do. You know, they're putting everything in their mouth. It's part of their processing of what is this? Oh, it's hard, it's soft, it's hot, it's cold, it's spiky, it's whatever. One of my twins used to put sand in his mouth all the time. And I'm sort of, but hey, you know, it goes in one end, comes out the other. And had to sort of leave it at that. But the point is, you're processing through all your senses. Okay. Now you get to school. No, sorry, I'm getting into my explanation of how dyslexia develops. So we've got, first of all, these three ingredients. The first is the nonverbal thinking. And nonverbal thinking is so much faster because it's instant. You know, you sense something and you just know it. And you connect the dots. And if it's visual spatial, you know, you're sort of jumping from one idea to another idea to link to this idea to that. And then you come up with something new. That's where their creativity comes from, right? So you've got that ingredient in the first place. Second ingredient, we see a consistently a higher than average level of sensory sensitivity, okay? Which means, among other things, that I will respond more quickly, more easily to any kind of stimulus that stimulates those senses. Therefore, I am more likely to react to a sound, to a smell, to a thought, to an emotion. So the third ingredient is disorientation. Now, disorientation is something that, again, we can all do. It's like when you're talking to somebody and your mind switches off, you're being introduced to someone and you just don't catch their name because at that moment you suddenly thought of something else and you didn't actually hear them. That's disorientation. Or when you're in a train and the one next to you, the train pulls forward, the one next to you pulls forward, and you have that feeling that you're sort of going back. Or you're in a car at a traffic light and the one next to you pulls forward. And again, you kind of got that feeling of moving when you actually aren't moving at all. And then you kind of get your bearings and you realize that you're exactly where you were. So that disconnection from reality is something that we all do. And when we're in a disoriented state, our eyes don't see what our mind doesn't see what our eyes are seeing. And our ears don't hear the sound that is actually going on. It affects our sight, our ability to hear. It affects our sense of time, which becomes completely elastic. It affects our balance. It affects our coordination. I had a funny conversation once with the father of a client where he suddenly burst out laughing when I explained this. And he said, well, he travels a lot for business, and he would be standing in the line waiting to board. And then suddenly he'd kind of keel over. And he'd think, oh my God, they're all going to think I'm drunk or something. But actually, he was just disoriented. He was in his world, lost in his thoughts, and his balance was affected. So this really happens. And this is also the degree to which. How frequently you disorientate, how long you disorientate for, and how intensely you disorientate all contribute to the types of symptoms. And obviously, where and when you disorientate contribute to the types of symptoms that you might develop. So, if you disorientate in the classroom while being taught the letters of the alphabet, you will learn them wrong because you're not perceiving them correctly. When we're in a disoriented state, our perceptions are involuntarily distorted. So anything that we take in that state is incorrect. And that's what leads to the mistakes, right? Can I
That
show
makes sense.
you how it works with dyslexia? Would that help?
Sure.
Sure.
You have a prop or something you want to show us? Yeah,
Yeah,
that'd be
absolutely.
great to see.
So you've got your kid who is exploring life, touching, feeling, manipulating things. And the thing is that doesn't matter which way you look at this, whether it's like that, that way, that way, that way, that way, completely different views, its meaning doesn't change, right? So this child has been touching, feeling everything, gets to school and is presented with one of these. Now, what's this? Oh, that's new. Not seen one of those before. At least it's never not really been on my radar. It might have been around, but I never noticed it. Now suddenly I'm being told that this is called whatever it's called. I can't pick it up. My method of learning is to pick up and manipulate, right? In order to work out what it's for. How can I use it? I can't pick it up with my hands, but I can pick it up with my imagination. So I then take this. And the minute I start playing with this, I'm in a disoriented state. And I'm no longer perceiving things accurately. And I play around with this. I turn it into a little snail or a tortoise, and it sort of wanders off the page. And I'm sort of, because this doesn't mean anything. Imagine you're faced with the Greek alphabet or the Russian alphabet, at this stage. Would you know what to do with it or
I
how
do
to
not
piece it together?
speak Greek or Russian. No.
There are some Greek letters that I saw that are literally like, kind of like a snake. And for me, that would just, it's gone. So basically, if I'm disoriented, I'm going to learn this incorrectly. If it was originally that way, I will probably, chances are, I will learn it that way around. If I'm lucky enough to learn it that way around, then I won't have a problem with this letter. But if I learn it this way around, anytime I come across it, I'm going to make a mistake. You see? And then if I make mistakes, I'm then going to have my emotions clouding my vision. And leading me to disorientate again. But the problem is, disorientation is fantastic at problem solving in the real world, but it doesn't work at all with symbols. And so, what we need to do to help children who are doing this in foundation stages is help them stabilize their potential, their perception, so that they can actually perceive the letters accurately, learn them correctly, and then there are no difficulties. And in fact, when Davis methods are used in the classroom, Davis learning strategies, it's especially adapted for classroom use. What we found, there was an investigation with three classrooms in California. They used them with 5-year-olds. And 2 years later, age 7, which is when dyslexic symptoms tend to arise, In the three classrooms where these methods were used, the first class, in all three of them, if the national average of any classroom is 15%, 15 to 20% learning difficulties, 80% middle of the road, and 5% gifted and talented. That tends to be the average in most classrooms, national averages. Well, in these three classrooms that use these methods, the 15% of learning difficulties disappeared. Not one child who was taught to learn to read and write using these methods that include teaching them how to stabilize their perception, and to re self-regulate their emotions and to self-regulate their energy. These are the three strength-based tools that we use in all our in all of our work with Davis. They didn't develop learning difficulties. And at the same time, what clinched it for me is that the 5% gifted and talented, classroom number one went from the national average of 5 to 10% gifted and talented referrals, not just I've got very bright kids, but they were actually referred for gifted and talented programs. The second classroom went from 5 to 20% of the classroom receiving referrals for gifted and talented programs. And the third classroom, which had a higher socioeconomic background, went from 5% national average to 40% of the class receiving gifted and talented programs. And so what we see so much is these 2E profiles who have this brilliance that's camouflaging a difficulty, or they have a difficulty that's hiding the brilliance. But, these are actually very intelligent kids who have wonderful strengths and talents that stem from their nonverbal thinking, their sensory sensitivity, and their talent for disorientation, because that disorientation allows them to make these connections that people who don't disorientate so much just don't make.
Fascinating. The topic of disorientation is not something that I've heard much of, and I it makes a lot of sense to me. Obviously, we're looking at a symbol-based world that the kids are transitioning into, and the closest association I have with that, as you're describing it, I'm like, oh yeah, that's my experience when I was learning to ballroom dance as an adult. Like I'm like, this is making no sense. Like I would miss out, and I'm like, how does that? And I'd have to like get additional ways of or other strategies that fit into what I knew to learn the steps, to learn the movements, because it was just like, this isn't the way I'm learning. And that's like that whole disorientation, I get that in a different mode or in a different learning opportunity as an adult. So I could see, and I could easily see at that point, as you were saying that, like what that would be like for a kid in the classroom trying to learn something new and being like disoriented like that. I'm like, yeah, I can relate to that. Like that would be so difficult.
Well, that is what's happening in our classrooms. So really, it's not the kids who are broken, it's the way we're teaching them. And the way we're teaching them might work for 80%, but there's 20% of the class, and that's a lot of kids who it just doesn't work for. And it actually creates the method that's being used to teach that's symbol-based is creating the learning difficulty.
Yeah, that makes sense. So
Because when they're taught using a method, which actually, just to say, the method works for everybody, the Davis learning strategies works for everybody across the board. And it's perfect for that age group because it's plasticine based, So, and they learn it in an engaging, creative way that together with tools that help to control that distorted perception and disactivate it. So that they are fully present when they're learning it. They're not in that distorted perceptual state, the disoriented state, and therefore they learn it correctly. And when they learn it correctly, there's no reason why they should, have difficulties. I will actually add that dyslexia arises from incorrectly assimilated from the foundations of literacy, the alphabet, upper and lowercase, punctuation marks, but we also have all that what we call trigger words. So words that don't have pictures, like and but and with and on and through and near and so on. All of these words don't have pictures. And the way a picture thinker or a neurodivergent thinker will read is by having a movie in their head. But when they come across these words that aren't necessarily very complicated in terms of length or syllables or letters even, but they don't have a picture. That will send them off. Oh, what does this mean? I'm off to my imagination. And of course, once they're in their imagination, they're no longer seeing what's on the page. And I don't know about you, but my sons, what they used to do, one in particular, who's got sort of more severe dyslexia, would see the first letter, first two letters, and guess the rest. And it was invariably after a trigger word, which had caused him to disorientate, so he wasn't able to see it anymore. In fact, I teach a parent course that used to be called, we've now changed the name to dyslexia, to Davis Parent Power Dyslexia. But it used to be called Why Tyrannosaurus, But Not If, because the kid was able to read Tyrannosaurus because he's got a picture. And he just sees the beginning, the T and the Y and the shape of the word, because they're word thinkers, whole word thinkers, and whole word thinking works for these kinds of minds. But if they had an if, it would come out as fi, or in Spanish, el, the is el would come out as le, and the same thing happens in all the languages when the letters start to dance around.
That's interesting. So, Dolores, we've talked about dyslexia. I'm wondering what these three traits that you've talked about look like with a child with autism, or
Dyscalculia, or
one of the other things that you ADHD maybe.
let me start with ADHD. Autism is a slightly different thing. It also stems from disorientation. It's not actually not disorientation, because disorientation implies that you are oriented in part, whereas with autism, it stems from unoriented. And we know Ron Davis himself is autistic. Actually, this is one of the big differences also between with Davis. He's autistic. At 11, he was there. Up until the age of 9, there was no verbal communication at all. At the age of 11, he was labeled uneducatively retarded. At the age of 17, somebody in his surroundings said, there's more going on here. So they did an IQ test and he scored 136. So they discover that there is great intelligence, in fact, in this young man, and so they say we need to teach him to speak, to read, and to write. They were able to teach him to speak, but they weren't able to teach him to read and write. But he was very good with numbers, and anyway, he managed to get a job and became a mechanical engineer through apprenticeship. But managed to set up various businesses, very successful. But still could not read and write. And he would have maybe lunch appointments, business lunches, and he would go the day before to the restaurant and painstakingly decipher the menu to decide what he wanted to eat, so that the next day he could come along and sit down with the people, receive the menu, say, "Oh, I think I'll have the beef today. Thank you." And nobody would know. So what he discovered aged so basically he came from being autistic, and one of his prime sort of missions in life actually was is to help others like himself. And so I can't do autism justice in the time that we've got available, but I recommend that anybody who wants to understand it reads this book by Abigail Marshall with Ron Davis. It's called Autism and the Seeds of Change. And in it, he describes his journey from non-speaking autism and the lessons that he needed to learn in order to feel safe in this world. And it's absolutely fascinating. The program is beautiful. I can't speak highly enough of it, and it really does transform lives.
So with
Coming
ADHD,
back to the ADHD,
yeah.
I was going to say the thing with ADHD is that, again, these minds have perfected the ability to go off into their world, and they actually enjoy doing it, right? They've got a very rich, vivid inner world, very fast brains. They're picture thinkers or they're sensory thinkers. It's dynamic in there, it's nonstop. They talk about it being constant noise. They find it hard to silence their brain. Anyway, what happens is that if whatever's happening in real life doesn't stimulate me as much as I can stimulate myself in my own world, I'm not going to hang around. Why should I? I've got a movie, I've got a party going on in my head, So if the classroom, whatever's going on in the classroom, the method that is being used to teach isn't engaging, or the subject matter isn't engaging, or maybe they've missed some content, so it just doesn't make sense anymore, they're not going to hang around. Their body can't move, but their mind is gone. And of course, once their mind is gone, they're not hearing accurately, they're not seeing accurately, sense of time completely disappears. Balance isn't so much affected because they're sitting down, and coordination, again, they're sitting down, so you don't really see the impact of it. But what's happening is that they're gone and then they come back, and then they're gone again, and then they come back, and then they're gone again, and then they come back. So it basically ends up being like living, watching two movies at the same time, right? I'm watching my imagination, whatever's going on in there, and I'm watching reality. But I'm only getting snapshots of reality. I'm not getting any kind of continuous picture of reality. So in my imagination, anything can happen. I can build Hogwarts in my garden if I wanted to. I can go to the moon and back, blink, oops, back again. It's that simple. There's no consequence. Anything that I want to happen happens. And it's also important to note that ADHD, attention deficit hyperactive disorder, is a misnomer, because there's no deficit of attention in terms of ability to pay attention, because if they're interested, you can't distract them, right? But if they're not interested, that's when they really suffer. And if they're not interested in the classroom, the teacher says, oh, he's not paying attention to me, therefore there's attention deficit, But it's not to do with them, it's more to do with how the subject matter is being taught and whether or not the student feels that it's relevant, because they have an interest-based attention, and it goes for things that they consider important, significant, and what was the word? It's significant and got a mental blank. Never mind, it'll come back to me. Can't remember. So basically, if I'm interested, there's no problem with my paying attention. But if I'm not interested, I'm off. And the problem nowadays is with screens, that these are creating so much stimulation that the level of stimulation required is being raised to such an extent that anything other than another, being on screen, feels boring. Feels dull. Real life feels boring. And that is a huge problem, because it is actually creating, contributing to the increase of signs of ADHD. Why? Because in my imagination, whether or not whatever happens, it doesn't really matter. But if in real life I'm only seeing, I see the beginning of something, but I don't hang around long enough to see what happens next. And then I see the end, but I didn't see what happened beforehand. I've just got snapshots. Things just are, but they're not connected, right? And if they're not connected, I can't understand change. And life is change. And if I don't understand change, I can't understand consequence. Because consequence is something that happens as a result of something else. You've got to have that connection between the after and the before, right? If I don't understand consequence, I can't understand cause and effect, all right? Or I certainly don't understand it in relation to me. I don't see that I necessarily did anything to cause whatever happened, because I wasn't around to notice what I might have done or understand how cause and effect flows in order to lead us to the outcome that might have happened. I don't understand time. I don't understand sequences in time. I don't understand sequences in arbitrary order, rules. Why should I follow these rules? They don't make any sense. I'm not interested. I'm not going to follow them. So that comes across as rebellion. But actually, it's just complete inability to understand why, certain rules or sequences are necessary for the functioning of a larger group, whether it's a family or a classroom or a school or society. And sequence of importance. I can't prioritize because everything's important. How do I know what's important? Because I have no sense and no clear sense of self, what's important to me. And if something's important to me, I might have a clear idea of that, but I don't have a sense that somebody else might have a different sequence of importance. And that leads to huge misunderstandings. And then, of course, we have order and disorder. which are missing. These are all concepts that Ron found he needed to understand in order to understand how life functions. They're part of our ADHD program, and they're also part of our autism program. And when autistic individuals go through these concepts, and we teach them in a way, again, in both cases, using plasticine for the abstract concepts, and then through explorations. So we're cooking, we're playing games, we're doing activities that they like, you know, that they enjoy. We're going to the mall and exploring and seeing whatever concept we're working on, seeing it in real life. And it's like, you know, it's those one of those things that once you can see something, you can't unsee it. Yeah. And so then it starts to form part of their understanding of life. And once they understand life, you know, once that becomes part of their understanding of life, they can then manage it. But if you haven't identified what, you know, something, you can't manage it. You're at the mercy of being buffeted left and right. And the thing with autism is, you know, change is terrifying because they don't have a sense of self. They don't have anything to which to connect, anything that they learn. And so things are continually happening in an unpredictable way, which makes life scary. And that's where you get the meltdowns, which are panic attacks. It's nothing like a 2-year-old's because I want, you know. It's the autonomic nervous system kicking in, saying, I feel seriously unsafe here. And with ADHD, so if I'm missing those concepts, I can't manage my life either. I might have, I've had a 25-year-old I worked with, brilliant, gifted, full of talents, all sorts of different talents, but starting loads of different projects, unable to finish any of them, and with a huge sense of frustration of not fulfilling his real potential and not knowing how to stay on task in order to be able to do that. And with a combination of the tools to turn off disorientation, understanding the way one's mind works, and understanding the mechanics of life, you know, including the mechanics of emotions in one of the programs. It goes into how we learn and how thoughts are relate to emotions and the mechanics of emotions. And all of that builds up to helping them understand the ingredients of responsibility, which include being able to do whatever it is and being motivated to do it. And they might be able to do it, but they really struggle with the motivation. But if you understand the mechanics of it, you can then manage yourself in that context.
Wow.
I like the idea of managing the or of understanding the mechanics of it and also applying it to real life, because so
Yeah.
often, you know, like in the classroom, it's not real life that we're talking about. It's like more of a like a rehearsal to it, or going over the theory of it.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and making
Yeah.
things explicit, I think, is helpful for not just kids with learning struggles, but also all of us. There's so
Yeah.
many things that we assume kids are going to understand just from role modeling or just from being in our culture that are really actually pretty hard to understand. So, yeah, so anyway, there's lots of stuff that you're saying that I find myself nodding
Yeah.
along with. And I'm wondering if there are people in the audience right now who are thinking, okay, this is definitely something I want to like do more with my child. What are some of the first steps? Because I can imagine people in the audience being in different places. There could be somebody that has resources and they might want to reach out and get services. There's also somebody that might not have as many resources,
Or have
and
access to it.
or might have not have access, or might even have to go through a wait list in order to get those services. What is that person who doesn't have as many resources? What can they do?
I would say the starting point are the books. That's why I've mentioned them, because for the cost of a book, I don't know how much this costs, but you know, the cost of a book, you get all the insights. And for me, the biggest shift was, I mean, it made a huge difference just understanding my child from a perspective that connected, I keep saying connected the dots, but I can't think of a better way of putting it, that made sense of the difficulties, that made sense of the strengths, the creativity. that made sense of the overlap, because 40% of dyslexics also have ADHD, and 40% of ADHDers also have dyslexia. There's a huge overlap. And then you've got dyscalculia, which very often gets pushed under the rug or dismissed as, oh, I'm just bad at math. But actually, what's happening there is they're also missing these concepts and mechanics of life, because any equation involves change. Any equation involves a cause and an effect, and a consequence. And there's a sequence in time, and so on. And so you need to fill in that part and give them pictures for the abstract ideas involved in maths. I would say for autism, this one, for dyslexia, the gift of dyslexia, definitely, again, price of a book. The gift of dyslexia, in fact, provides all the steps. And there have been facilitators who have worked with their kids and clients who have worked with their kids on the basis of the book,
Wow.
because half of the book explains dyslexia and the other half actually goes through and takes, says, okay, now say this and do this and say this and do this. So for the cost of the book, he gave away the crown jewels in there. Okay. Obviously, as a facilitator, we build up a huge amount of experience, and not every client is the same. And by the way, I use the word client. We all use the word client because they're not sick. They're not patients. They just process differently. Yeah. For math, I would highly recommend my colleague Richard Whitehead, who heads up Davis UK and Ireland. He's the director of Davis in the UK and Ireland, who wrote this wonderful book called Counting on Fingers, where he goes through and explains again what's happening and why kids and adults struggle with math. And again, as I was saying, it's because they're lacking this sort of fundamental clear understanding of these life concepts, or the mechanics of life, together with the abstract sort of understanding of what you're doing when you're adding or you're subtracting or multiplying or dividing or any of the other applications. But if those foundational ones aren't working, nothing else is going to work. It's not going to make sense. And so the whole subject becomes, a huge area of source of stress and struggle. So that would be the first thing. I would say anybody who there are also bursaries in different hubs were organized. There's a hub, the UK and Ireland one also manages Africa, and I know that they're looking to find ways of making these methods accessible to people across Africa. If anybody wants to find out more about that, just go to davismethod.co.uk. The international Davis site is davismethod.com. And anybody with who would like to work with a facilitator, you go there and there's a menu top right, and it takes you a sort of a horizontal menu appears, and there's a find a facilitator section. And you can go in there and find a facilitator near you. We've got facilitators all over the world. And they, again, different each region will have its own pricing based on, the economic circumstances of that region and so on. So there's a whole range, and it doesn't have to be in person. A lot of programs are delivered online. So even if you're out in the sticks, you can still find somebody who does online programs who you can work with.
Okay, great. Well, we talked about it's been actually a very insightful conversation about different ways of looking at neurodiversity. I've appreciated this. As we're wrapping up here, is there anything else that you wanted to add or anything you want to leave folks with here?
I think the main thing is this new understanding of neurodiversity as stemming from those three ingredients. Because if we understand that it stems from nonverbal thinking, the sensory sensitivity and the talent for disorientation, then what looks like stubbornness isn't stubbornness. It's that they simply don't know how to do it. Or what looks like a problem or disorder, again, it's not. There are reasons for it. So understand those reasons. Understand that those same reasons celebrate the strengths. So you can celebrate the strengths and say, listen, this brilliant way of thinking that makes you so good at sports or cooking or art or math or whatever it happens to be, Are also the ones with these distorted perceptions, which are involuntary. They're the ones behind these other difficulties that you're experiencing. And so just having a shift of perspective to not, this shift in perspective helped us to no longer see our child as broken. And when we can see our child as whole, as processing differently, we no longer have the pathologizing sort of, view that society has given us. We no longer have that siloed view that executive function, oh, got to go to the psychiatrist and get, medication's the only solution, or dyslexia, speech therapy, or phonics, autism, the methods that are out there for autism. It's not, it brings it all together. And so you can see your child as a whole wonderful, talented being. And then I would just urge, celebrate the talents, find ways to strengthen those, mitigate the pain of school as much as you possibly can in order to preserve self-esteem. There's a wonderful video which I referred to actually. I've got it's called Las Vidas de Mario. And it's in a presentation that I have created, which is free, which explains dyslexia and ADHD, which explains the risks of not supporting individuals with this way of processing, this way of thinking. Because when they're not supported, you send them down a downward spiral. But when they are supported, they come out of school, maybe not with all the grades that you would like them to grade, but to get, but they come out of school and then they can dedicate themselves to what they're really interested in and passionate about. And that's when they take off. But they're only going to take off if they still have some self-esteem left. And the, these two splits, there was research that showed that 50% of prison inmates had learning difficulties. 50%. And at the same time, there was, I think it was around 2007, they did there was a research thing in the UK that identified 40% of self-made millionaires had a learning difficulty. And my understanding and my experience is that it all depends on how we nurture these minds in these critical developmental years. So seeing, understanding what's going on from a non-pathologizing view, from a strength-based view, for me was life-changing. For my son was life-changing because he was age 10, was suicidal because he'd been bullied for 2 years. And it's just a horrible situation to be in as a parent. Wouldn't wish it on anybody. And my brother actually did commit suicide, and he was an unsupported, non-recognized neurodivergent thinker. So I would say understand neurodivergence from this new, investigate it. Don't take my word for it. Investigate it, look into these books, find out more about it, but it will help you if you reach the same conclusions as I did. It will help you to see your child in a much more positive way. And that will put you in a better place to actually support them through school.
Thanks for this, shift and encouraging us to look at the kids differently, especially as a whole child, looking at them with their strengths. You've mentioned a number of resources here, and is there anything, or what would be the best way for people to find out more about yourself and what you have and the information that you have available online?
I think the best way is probably to go to either of the websites that I've referred or that I've mentioned already. On the Davis UK, so davismethod.co.uk website, there's a URL which I'll give to you. I don't have it to hand right now, but where I've got an explanation, a present, I've prepared a video presentation where I go through the root causes of dyslexia and ADHD, and I talk about how Davis supports them, and also what the risks are of not supporting these things in terms of mental health issues, addiction, and so on.
Okay.
So
Great.
yeah,
So
I would go to there,
we'll include the
and
link.
I'm locatable via either of the websites. If you go to the international site, I'm on the directory there, so you can find me there as well.
Okay, awesome. We'll put
Wonderful.
those links in the speaker notes. And we appreciate you taking the time to talk to us here and sharing all of this with the folks here. It's insightful, and it's, the first step in looking at our kids differently. Thank you for
Absolutely.
taking the time, and it's been a pleasure talking to you about all this. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.